Hello, I'm Troy Abels from Hanford, California, and you are listening to Gospel Tangents.
Welcome to Gospel Tangents, the best source for Mormon history, science, and theology. I'm Rick Bennett. Was John D. Lee the most guilty in the Mountain Meadows Massacre? I asked that to Richard Turley, a church historian and director of public affairs, and we'll find out that he thinks that some other people might have been responsible. Check out our conversation. I'd also like to ask you to please send me a liner like Tyler did. Just send me a thing that says, "Hi, I'm Mary Johnson from New Hampshire, and you're listening to Gospel Tangents," or "It's the best source for Mormon history, science, and theology," or something like that. Send me an email to gospeltangents@gmail.com, and I'll put it on my next video. Thanks again. Now back to our conversation. Well, let's talk a little bit about the trial. So okay. I understand, you know, there were at least two trials, and you also did mention a little bit earlier that there were nine people indicted. Mm-hmm. We know that John D. Lee is the only one who was ever convicted of anything. Do you think that he was the most guilty of the nine? And who are the nine also?
Well, first of all, let me say that you're teasing up our next volume on the subject, which in the preface to Massacre of Mountain Meadows, we included a statement that this volume was not complete. I mentioned we gathered a vast amount of information. So in the preface we write, "The collection of material for our book became an embarrassment of riches. We concluded, reluctantly, that too much information existed for a single book. Besides, two narrative themes emerged. One dealt with the story of the massacre, and the other with its aftermath. One with crime, and the other with punishment. This first volume tells only the first half of the story, leaving the second half to another day." And so we're nearly, Barbara Jones Brown and I are nearly finished with the second half, which picks up the story where this one ends. This one, except for the epilogue, which is intended for readers who needed quick closure. Mm-hmm. Except for that epilogue, we begin where this one leaves off, right after the massacre. And then we go from there to the through the trials and execution of John D. Lee, and then we have a final chapter that takes all of the main characters to their deaths. Mm-hmm. So it's a very interesting book. Contrary to popular belief, John D. Lee is not the only one who was indicted. A grand jury in September of 1874 indicted nine persons. The key figures in the massacre were first Isaac Haight. Isaac Haight was the militia major and also the stake president in Cedar City at the time. And he seems to be the linchpin, the person who was at the center, who organized the events that lead to the massacre and gave approval for the massacre to occur. William Dame, who was his military superior, the commander of the militia in southern Utah, he lived in Parowan. He was also a stake president. And then John D. Lee, who was the person who Isaac Haight brought in to make an initial attack on the immigrants and who was on the ground at the time of the final massacre and helped to massacre people. And then in addition to those, there were probably, you know, all told, there were probably at least 50 people, maybe 60 people who played some kind of role in the massacre at some point. So it was clearly group violence. The people who were investigating the massacre and who were trying it were not necessarily interested in getting all those people into a courtroom. They were interested in trying the leaders. This is not unusual. And if you look at group violence across the United States and across the world, often it's the leaders that law enforcement officials go after. And that was certainly the case here. They were going after leaders and other persons who might be able to help them indict the leaders or convict them.
Okay. So, and I don't know if you don't want to give this away, you know, you can let us know. But was John D. Lee most culpable in this then? It sounds like you're saying that Haight and Dame were probably more responsible. Is that true?
Well, William Dame was responsible for being the highest ranking military official to authorize the final massacre to occur. Mm-hmm. Isaac Haight was responsible for launching John D. Lee to carry out the initial attack and was clearly in the chain of command giving the final order. He was also the person who had the original idea, I think, of trying to attack the company. This is group violence. There's shared culpability here among a lot of people. Mm-hmm. But those three, William Dame and Isaac Haight and John D. Lee were certainly among the three most responsible.
Okay. So I know Will Bagley wants to put this right up to Brigham Young. How would you respond to that charge?
Well, the answer to how this all occurred is in the details. And as we took all the details and mapped everything out, sort of take all the people through time and space with what they knew, it becomes very clear that this is something that happens at the local level. You can chart how the company comes through. People in Cedar City get upset. They want to attack the company. Isaac Haight brings in John D. Lee to initially launch that attack. I think initially what they hoped to do, even before an attack, was to punish this company, and they were going to take some of their cattle. It was basically a way of getting cattle away from a cattle-rich company. When they failed to do that, then they thought, okay, we'll attack the company and steal some of their cattle. And then when that went awry, and I think they were still going to just let them go on to California. But then the day after the initial attack, as we describe in our first book, Massacre at Mountain Meadows, a couple of messengers who had been sent by Isaac Haight to call off John D. Lee because his high council wasn't backing him, they got there in time to discover that the attack had already occurred. And then they panic, and as they're headed back to Cedar City, they run into two immigrants who were not in the wagon train at the time the attack occurred. They had gone out to gather loose cattle, and they were on their way back. And so these two men from Cedar City shot at these two men, killed one of them, and the other raced away on his horse, got back to the company, and blew their cover. From the beginning, it was the intent of the Cedar City officials to try to make what they were doing appear as an Indian attack. So this was a double crime in that they were not only committing murder and theft, but they were also committing a crime of race in that they were trying to take the blame that was associated with them and foist it entirely upon their local Paiute neighbors who were their friends and who worked with them. And so when it became known to the company that was attacked that there were local white men involved, then that blew their cover. And at that point, they began to rationalize on this slippery slope of sin and crime that if they let them go on to California, they would bring back a force from California. At the same time, a federal army was headed from the east to the west, that they would be caught in between these two forces. And so in a horrible rationalization, they decided that the best way to prevent that was to send a group in to lure the company out of their wagon fort and then to kill them at close range. And that's the final attack that was authorized by William Dame and Isaac Haight.
It's just such a horrible story.
It is. It's horrible, and it's poor reasoning. I mean, they had to know that if this company didn't show up in California, somebody was going to wonder why. And people would go back and try to find out where they were, and they discovered that they were all dead. So it was horrible reasoning, horrible rationalization, but in the challenging and stressful times they were in, they made that terrible decision.
So I know you mentioned that something that the company did made the people in Cedar City upset. I've also heard some people say they didn't do anything wrong. Mm-hmm. You know, I believe you were like, the truth is always in the middle. So what possibly made the people in the Cedar City upset?
Well, they were frustrated, and understandably so. You're a wagon company. You're coming through with your families, and you're looking for food. See, historically, wagon companies that were going from the Midwestern United States onto California had to carry all the food that they needed for that entire trip. But beginning with particularly 1849, 1850, wagon companies began to realize that if they carried just half of that food weight with them and some money, they could then replenish their supplies in Salt Lake City for the rest of the distance up to go on to California. And this particular company was made up of multiple companies that crossed the plains together. But when they reached Utah, they appear to have chosen Alexander Fancher as the captain of their combined company because Fancher had been through before. He knew the watering sources. He knew where the grass was. He's the perfect person to choose as a wagon captain. And having been through before, he and the others, I think, just assumed they'd be able to reprovision in Salt Lake City. But when they got to Utah, because of the Utah War, the Saints weren't selling. They were saving all their provisions and guns and ammunition for their own use in the event of a war. And so this company suddenly found itself without what it needed. mean, it had cattle, but if you eat meat alone, you're going to get awfully sick. And so as they were coming down through and trying to buy supplies and found themselves unable to do so, they felt that they were in a very inhospitable situation. And when they got to Cedar City, the last place to reprovision before going through the, you know, the Mojave Desert onto California, they managed to get a little bit of grain, but they weren't able to get all the things that they needed. And so they were understandably upset, and they expressed that with their language. When the people in Cedar City reported what had happened up to William Dame essentially said, well, words are but wind. In other words, you know, just let them go. The fact that they expressed themselves is no reason to try to do anything physical towards them. In those days, many cities in the United States, including cities in Utah, had anti-profanity ordinances. If somebody profaned in public, you could arrest them and then either imprison them or give them a fine. Isaac Haight, before the company arrived, said, we're going to try to get some cattle from these people. Why get cattle? Well, in the event of a siege, they'd have food that they could use to help supply themselves. So if these people were expressing themselves verbally, they could have used their anti-profanity ordinance as a way of arresting these people and then taking cattle from them as a fine. So while the exact details are somewhat murky, we probably had something about like that going on. In short, there was nothing that these immigrants did, nothing that would justify an attack on a single person, let alone a wholesale execution of men, women, and children who had been promised protection under a white flag.
Mm-hmm. Wow. I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Richard Turley. In our next conversation, I'll ask him if John D. Lee was unfairly blamed in the massacre.
So he was not innocent. But in this era of group violence, it was very, very easy, particularly once he was dead, for everybody to begin to say, well, it was just his fault. It was all John D. Lee. And so he and his descendants took a disproportionate share of the blame for what was actually group violence.
We'll have a transcript out shortly on this conversation, and you can purchase individual copies at our website at gospeltangents.com/shop. If you want to be the first to get a copy, please subscribe on our website for just $10 a month. I'll send it to you first as a PDF. Or if you'd like a physical copy, for $15 a month, I'll be happy to send that to you as well. You can get our transcripts at our Amazon.com author page. I've got a link here, but just do a search for Gospel Tangents Interview and you should be able to find a bunch of them there. Please subscribe at patreon.com/gospeltangents. For $5 a month, you can hear the entire interview uncut. And for $10, you can get a PDF copy. We've also got a $15 tier where if you want a physical copy, I'll be the first to send it to you. So please subscribe at Patreon or on our website at gospeltangents.com as well. For our latest updates, please like our page at facebook.com/gospeltangents. And also check our Twitter updates at Gospel Tangents as well. Please subscribe on our Apple Podcasts page at tinyurl.com/gospeltangents. Or you can subscribe on your Android device. Just do a search for Gospel Tangents. Thanks again for listening. Click here to subscribe, here for a transcript, and over here we've got some more of our great videos. Thanks again.